This is All Things Git, the podcast about Git. I'm Edward Thompson.
And I'm Martin Woodward. Well, Ed, how are you doing? You've had a busy few days.
It has been a busy few days. For those listeners who weren't reading the news, there was a bit of a security vulnerability in Git. In fact, we were supposed to have a podcast out. I tried to get a podcast out every other Tuesday, and this one slipped. I was supposed to have one ready to ship on Tuesday, and it turns out I was a little busy Tuesday because there was a bit of a fire drill. There was a security hole found in Git and in all of the projects, of course, that then use Git, like libgit2 and Visual Studio Team Services, GitHub. You know, the list goes on and on and on.
Well, fantastic. So let's drill into that. But I hear you've got a special guest to help us.
I do. I was actually able to wrangle the security researcher who found this security issue.
Woo! Hearing it from the horse's mouth. Fantastic. So, Etienne Stolmans, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hey, how you doing? So, for people that don't know Etienne, he's a platform security engineering researcher at the Public Cloud Security Group in Salesforce. He's a keen interest in protocol reversing and finding ways to abuse functionality in everyday products. Good man. Welcome to the show. And thank you, first of all, very much for your work in this space that discovered this issue with Git. And for also thanks for all the collaboration with the Git community in, you know, in getting it fixed and being able to get the issue sort of resolved and, you know, negated before it became a big deal. So yeah, fantastic stuff. Thank you for your work.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Great. So why don't we first of all dig into Ed, do you want to try and explain, like, from a user's point of view, what the issue was, and you know, for people that don't know, go update your Gits, you know, but do you want to explain what the issue was a little bit, and then we'll dig into how Etienne found it and what we do, what, you know, what happened?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of blog posts out about that kind of describe the issue, but in short, you could bundle a Git repository inside another Git repository.
See, I never knew you could do that. I knew Git submodules were always a bad idea. Like, generally, you know, if you solve a problem with Git submodules, now you've got at least three problems, not just two problems, you know. So, but I never knew you could actually check it all in as well.
Well, you can. It's not really something that I would have thought was a good idea. And
so do you actually commit the .git folder, or are you committing your working set as well? I didn't know this was possible, first of all.
So what happens is you can commit the what would be in the .git folder into another repository. And then with this vulnerability, you can point the submodule into that folder that you've checked in, right? So, you know, normally this folder just contains a bunch of Git metadata files, and it's rather meaningless to Git, right? We actually do this in libgit2. We bundle a bunch of Git repositories that we then use for unit tests.
Oh, yeah.
And integration tests. And we don't think anything of it, right? These are just things that we copy into place, and then we make them a Git directory after the fact. So this is just sort of a meaningless directory with Git metadata in it that's checked into another Git repository, except this particular vulnerability allows you to then point a submodule into that directory that you've got checked in. And that's also weird, but not necessarily problematic, except when you go to Git clone this parent repository, and if you recursively clone it, what happens is Git will try to go check out that submodule, realize it's already on disk, right? Because the parent repository checked it out and put it on disk, and then decide it doesn't actually need to go download it because it's already there. And then, here's the really bad part. Then it will look inside that submodule repository, and it'll go looking for hooks to execute, like a post-checkout hook, and then it'll run it. So an attacker could have put a post-checkout hook into a Git repository. So just by cloning recursively, you've got to clone recursively this repository, it will execute code that the attacker has.
Nice.
It is nice.
Etienne, nicely played, sir. Nicely played. This is a classic. This is just a classic example. You know, you can hear, like, Ed, who knows Git very well, and one of the Git developers and things. And, you know, often a security vulnerability stems from a developer going, "You can do that? Why would you do that?" And then, of course, it's not protected because we never even thought about somebody doing that sort of thing. So well done, sir. How did you find it, Etienne?
Well, I started off at the same point you did, Martin. I didn't know what submodules were. I was working on a project and there were submodules involved. And I realized I do not know how submodules work. So I started doing some research into submodules. I set up a basic submodule, cloned it, and wanted to see what changes happen on disk. And when I was looking at the changes that are made on disk, I happened to notice that the submodule name is also used in the directory or in the path name for that submodule where it gets checked in. And that's when I started playing around and seeing if you could manipulate that and do things you're not supposed to do.
Sure enough.
It turns out... Now, this is really interesting because this is very similar to the first sort of Git security vulnerability I was ever involved in, which was... now, Ed, you'll remember this better than me, but we had a problem where you could actually... Git stops you from checking in, from putting in files in the tree that belong in the .git folder. Generally, it generally tries to stop you do that because of all the problems you talk about, including being able to put pre and post hooks in and then execute arbitrary code. But the protection for stopping stuff into the Git folder was basically, as I remember it, a string match on .git all lowercase because that's what that folder is on Linux. And then when we ran into file systems that were case sensitive, case preserving, like NTFS on Windows or HFS Plus on the Mac, then you could check in something with .gLiT or something like that, and it would on disk translate to the same folder at the file system level, and then so allow you to go get stuff in to the .git folder. Is that right?
That is right. I've memorized this CVE number, CVE 2014-9390.
Wow, you always worry when they're branded on your heart. Like, that was a bad week.
Oh, that was a terrible week. yeah. So a CVE is a CVE stands for Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures. That's the fancy name for a security hole.
Okay.
And it basically there's this clearinghouse called MITRE, M-I-T-R-E, that assigns these and keeps track of them just so that you have the information to refer back to. And this new security vulnerability also has a CVE. I'm blanking on the number. Etienne, do you actually know off the top of your head?
Yes, I've actually got it in front of me. It's CVE 2018-11235.
Okay. This one was not nearly as traumatic for me.
Yeah, exactly. You should get that laser etched into a mug, Etienne. You should be proud of that one.
That's right. Thank you very much. Yeah, it blew up a bit more than I expected.
Yes. Well, so do you want to explain a little bit about, so you found this issue and you're playing with submodules and you're saying to yourself, wow, submodules are crazy. How does this even work? And then you're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's why they're strange things. So then what did you do? What were your next steps then? Because obviously, you're a good guy, a responsible security researcher. What was the next step for you?
Yeah, so once I found the vulnerability, it actually took me quite a while to exploit it because I didn't know Git too well. And there's also a bit of odd behavior in the actual exploit. You have to clone things or set up the repository in a certain order. But once I got it to work, I decided, well, I can't report this without showing actual real-world impact. Mm-hmm. Was at that point, I was like, oh, well, you can convince someone to clone your repository, but hey, this might get shot down down the line of, hey, you actually need to social engineer someone. It's not a real vulnerability. So I started digging into services that possibly clone Git repositories and might be doing the clone recursively. And I remembered GitHub Pages allows you to do this. So I just tried it against GitHub Pages and I got some code execution. At this point, it took me a while to calm down and I had to have a coffee. it was a big surprise. So I know GitHub has a bug bounty program and it's a nice way to be able to report a vulnerability. So I decided to report it directly to GitHub and I was in two minds. Should I report it to GitHub and to the Git project? So I asked the guys at GitHub, could you help with this? Because I know they work closely with, or they've got a whole bunch of Git developers yeah. in their team. So I figured it would probably be best if they handle managing this disclosure and sharing it with the Git team.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for doing that. We should give big props to the GitHub Security Bug Bounty Program because, you know, the fact that we have such a strong program there for reporting Git security exploits is fantastic and shows in this case, you know, it worked. So, and as you say, the, you know, PEF and other people over at GitHub are very, very closely involved with the Git community and so knew what to do to make sure the whole Git community was protected, not just GitHub. And again, a testament to the awesome people in the Git community that's been consistently the way that I see issues get handled in the Git community. You know, no one vendor who sells Git tools uses this as a, you know, nobody thinks of this as a chance to get a leg up on competition at all. It's always about the users of Git and making sure Git as the open source project is able to be trusted by developers worldwide. So yeah, brilliant stuff.
Same. I'm always impressed by that too. You know, at Microsoft, we build Git tools. GitHub builds Git tools. We're competitors, right? We compete with each other. When we're talking about the Git project as a whole, but especially in the security space, there's no competition. There's no thought that a security vulnerability is some competitive advantage. No, we work together to fix these things, which is great.
And it's even when, because that one we mentioned before, where, you know, it was to do with file system stuff, you know, and like on Linux, it was fine. So actually GitHub's, you know, it wasn't as big of a deal for them. But over on the Windows platform, it was a much bigger deal because we were case insensitive, case preserving. Yeah, again, then it was like a matter of PEF picking up the phone to you and sort of, so PEF's one of the, you know, Junio's like the main. Do you want to explain the structure of the Git community yet? Because I'll get it wrong.
Right. So of course, Linus Torvalds invented Git, but then very quickly handed it over to Junio Hamano. Junio is the day-to-day maintainer of the Git project now. And aside from that, there is Jeff King, a.k.a. PEF, who's been on the show before. PEF was begrudgingly on this show before. He doesn't like this podcast. Despite that, he's sort of the, I don't know, I would call him a lieutenant. I don't know if there's a real formal relationship there, mm-hmm. but you know, he definitely does a lot. He owns contributing to the Git project from GitHub's perspective and just does a lot of contributions, period.
And he's one of the main people doing, you know, commenting on patches and things like that, as well as Junior.
That's right.
What's always been impressive to me, and I've learned tons from, is the way that Junio and PEF and people like that manage the community, you know, and keep it open and very making sure everybody gets kudos and credit for when they share things, and you know, it just sets a really great example of how to run an open source project. So, do you want to explain, Ed, when Etienne reported the issue to the GitHub bug bounty program? And then, so then what happened there? Like, when did you start hearing about it over it? Because you work in Microsoft. So, right. Yeah, how did you first hear about this issue? How did that happen?
Yeah, so we have a mailing list for the Git security, for the people who are interested in Git security, either are working on the Git project in security areas, or also people who are building tools on top of Git, and especially hosting Git repositories, and need to have patches in place when we announce these security vulnerabilities. And that, again, is just people from vendors all over. It's GitHub, it's GitLab, it's Visual Studio Team Services, and people building clients as well.
So is that list, is that like, can anyone join that list? Or do you have to be, you know, do you have to like prove a reason for needing to be in that list? Because as Etienne said, he didn't want to zero day the entire Git community. He wanted to make sure he was doing this responsibly.
That's right.
So what do we do?
It is a closed, you know, if you're building, say, like I said, GitHub or Visual Studio Team Services, then yeah, of course, we'll allow you to join. But yeah, it's not just open to the public. So
you have to kind of apply to join.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a step forward from, because I remember the initial Git security issues when we were trying to figure out what to do. It was very much, who does Junio know over in Windows and who does PEF know over in over who will know about Windows because Windows has a problem with this particular exploit, and that's why they picked up the phone to you. And then when you were you looked at the other issue, it was to do with case insensitive, case reserve, and then you were like, "Ooh, this isn't a Windows problem. This affects the Mac as well, because even though you work for Microsoft, you spend most of your time on the Mac." And then so then we ended up calling in the people from Apple and things like that. So it was done very much informally, wasn't it, to begin with?
Yeah, it was very ad hoc. Yeah, there was no Git security mailing list the first day, if I recall, back in 2014. We didn't even find out about it. I didn't find out about it because I was at Microsoft. I found out about it because I was maintaining libgit2, working on libgit2.
Right.
So Pef told VMG, who was then the maintainer of libgit2, and VMG told me, and I looked at that and I'm like, well, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about the weird ways that Microsoft's file system works, like short names.
And so all those will be valid with this submodule exploit as well, would they? So if you were to try and commit a file that was like that was inside a repository that was called git-1 or something.
Git mod-1, I think, would be the short name.
and then point your submodule to it. That would have worked, you know, with a naive fix to this issue.
That's right. So these fixes are always more complicated than they appear at first glance. So, and that's why it's great to have the community. So yeah, so the first thing I saw was that, you know, just an email to the Git security mailing list describing the problem, indicating that there had been a successful exploit on GitHub Pages. And then we started working together to figure out all the different ways that it could be exploited. But I'm curious what happened, Etienne, I'm curious what happened from your perspective when that happened. While we were busy talking about this, were you getting any feedback about this? Were we in contact with you, or did we just kind of go dark for a while?
No, so I got really good feedback from the GitHub security team. I must say I was super impressed because I managed to get it to work on a Sunday afternoon. So that would have been really early hours stateside. I sent it straight to the GitHub bug bounty. And within 2 hours, I had a response on a Sunday, really early morning. And hey, we've triaged this. I think within 3 hours, it was completely disabled in GitHub Pages. You couldn't exploit this anymore.
Nice.
And there was constant feedback. When the initial fix came out that just verified the module path, I was included in that. I said, hey, here's our fix. Can you see any way past it? So there was really good communication. It was really refreshing.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's nice to hear the success stories, isn't it? Because normally when you get news, it's because of things gone wrong. And what people don't see is the thousands of responsible security researchers responsibly disclosing things and then things getting patched and users being not affected, you know? And it's great to hear when it goes right.
When I worked at GitHub, I didn't have a lot of actual visibility into the security team. It turns out that I was working on like nitty gritty stuff that just never got exploited, thankfully. And so it's great to hear that they do.
And then over on our side, we have now it's a bad, terrible name, especially for you, Ed, but we have the MSRC. So they're kind of our, you know, ninja council of security researchers that when you get an MSRC email, you tend to drop everything and just, you know, go into a dark cave for a few hours until it's resolved. Yeah, it's funny how these groups exist in these big companies that just go do stuff. So it's great to see.
It is. Yeah. I've always been impressed by, you know, when I came into Microsoft, you and I, Martin, we came in at the same time.
Yeah.
And we had our products get reviewed by the quote unquote security board. And I was like, oh, what's this?
And we were thinking big company, this is going to be like, they're just going to freak out that we've implemented our own NTLM protocol and they're going to, you know, they're not going to understand Java and, you know, but it turns out we were wrong.
Yeah, it was the exact opposite. It was actual security researchers who swooped in and were like, well, 4 days out of the week, I'm busy doing research on quantum cryptography, but today I'll take a little time out and talk to you about the things that you're doing in your software. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's just always a pleasure to deal with. And then whenever we do any, so inside Microsoft Etienne, we do like these red team exercises where yes. We have our internal security researchers are basically constantly trying to hack us. And as somebody who has, you know, some privileged access to different systems, like they're trying to fish me and everything and socially engineer me. And it's basically anything a hacker would do, they can do. And you're constantly, like the number of times I get an email and I'm like, Ed, are you messing with me again? You know what I mean? Like, is there a red team exercise going on? Because this looks really sketchy. And you go, no, that's a real person trying to spearfish you. And you're, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah.
So it's awesome. What do you do in your day job, Etienne? Are you on the red team?
Yeah, so I come from a red team background. I've been at Heroku / Salesforce for 6-8 months now. And day-to-day job is a combination of red team, blue team. We work closely with the product engineers to try and improve our own security posture. I also work on our bug bounty triage. So that's why I know, that's why I'm so impressed with the bug bounty program from GitHub. Okay, that's a good response. I'm going to
make sure we do that.
Day-to-day job is just securing the Heroku platform and the greater public cloud offerings from Salesforce.
Fantastic. So you talk about Heroku there and the protocol. So is that why you were poking around the Git protocol? Because one of the things people don't probably realize is that Git is everywhere. Like Git is used as a deployment protocol now in a lot of places. And it's surprising the products and the places in which Git is. So is that why you were digging into it?
Yeah, so I didn't set out to find a vulnerability in Git itself. Uh-huh. I was looking at a system that used Git or was cloning repositories. And I was like, well, let's see if I can mess with the system that's doing the clone. And went down that rabbit hole, and that's how I ended up in looking at Git itself. So it's always interesting with these vulnerabilities. It tends to be that when you're not really actively looking for a vulnerability, that's when you find it. Mm-hmm. It's the cases where you're trying to understand something. And you said it right at the beginning of the podcast when you said, trying to paraphrase correctly, you said, I didn't think of looking at it in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, as a security researcher, I do a lot of the times is I look at something that I don't understand. And because I don't understand it fully, I look at it in a different way from someone who does understand it.
Yeah. It's a bit like, sort of the classic testing thing, isn't it? Because you're coming at it with a fresh set of eyes. You're not assuming a certain way of working. And oftentimes the initial implementation was like 100% secure or, as close to 100% secure as you can ever get. But then over time, functionality got added somewhere else that when combined with this particular edge case of a thing which people have kind of forgot they could use that way, then boom, you've got a horrific security vulnerability and nobody really noticed because nobody ever thought of doing it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't even know why you can change this value, this particular configuration value. I'm looking at it, I'm like, why can you even change that? But here we are.
Yeah. So, hey, Ed, let's just take a quick step back. So the particular vulnerability is when you're checking in stuff into your Git repo. And then it is a vulnerability. But if I was to check in a shell script that was rm-rf, that would also do bad things to a system. So
if somebody cloned it and ran that shell
why
script.
Why is this different in this instance?
Right. So, a lot of people have said, well, if I git clone a repository and build it and run the contents, then that could be bad, and that's true, and you shouldn't perhaps run things that you don't trust. But this is actually Git running this content. You don't have to build anything, you don't have to run anything. You just run git clone --recursive on a on an evil repository, and Git itself will do the execution of the
right. And that's why you were able to use it, Etienne, to do code execution within GitHub Pages, because GitHub Pages server, where you running a process that had different permissions to probably, you know, the web server runs as that serves GitHub Pages. The part that was doing the Git clone is the thing that was executing the code, and therefore you're able to go do stuff that you probably shouldn't have been able to do.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic. I see. Got it. Yep. Yeah, no, I see it. And yeah, just don't use submodules, people.
It's true. I mean, so this is a big deal, you know, don't,
yeah.
No question. However, it does require you to, there is a bit of social engineering involved still. I've got to convince someone. I've got to first publish a repository that contains this. And then I've got to convince somebody to Git clone --- recursive repository that they've never heard of. Or yeah. I've got to find a popular repository with submodules out on in the wild, perhaps an open source project, and then engineer a pull request that gets merged that does this, which seems really unlikely.
It does, but there have been instances where, you know, especially over in like some of the JavaScript community, you know, with Node, like with poisoned sure. NPM modules and things. Sure. And, you know, and we've seen like with, you know, OpenSSL and stuff where, you know, there's like major issues that have been hiding in plain sight for a long time. And you're like, hey, how did that? You know, you often wonder yourself, how did that commit actually make it in? You know
right.
what I mean?
It's, right. You know, yeah, I absolutely don't want to downplay this, but I do, you know, want
to caution to the wind. It's definitely not trivial to poison people. And it's not now, because this is the other fascinating thing about the way that this was handled and the way that Git security incidents are usually handled now, is that all the major commercial hosters of Git, for people who are hosting Git repositories, not people who are using Git as a deployment protocol, interestingly, but for people that are hosting Git repositories, they'd all got their servers patched to reject these types of repositories and make sure there weren't any in existence before we disclosed the vulnerability publicly. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So that's one of the big things that the Git security mailing list does, is it makes sure that the big commercial hosters who could be used as a vector for this type of attack get patched before the attack is announced. So if you try to today, if you try to Git push one of these repositories, GitHub is patched, GitLab is patched, Visual Studio Team Services is patched. I assume Bitbucket is patched too, but I actually haven't seen an announcement from them about it. But if you try to Git push one of these repositories, we'll just reject it. So you can't push one of these repositories up and then try to convince somebody to Git clone --- recursive it. You'd have to set up your own Git server, and that's even sketchier looking. So, so it's important that we not be used as vectors to propagate this sort of attack.
So how did, like, do you want to tell us, because the fix to fix that server side, from what I know of the server side, is probably even less trivial, is less trivial than fixing it client side, which was not easy in the first place. So what did you actually do to fix that on the server? You talk about VSTS rather than GitHub, obviously, because you don't work there anymore, but yeah, right. Well, whatever right. you do. Mm-hmm.
It's actually not terrible. So what we do is we run an integrity check on every push that comes into a Git repository, and everybody does that, right? Just to make sure.
What's the integrity check for?
To make sure that you're not pushing a bad repository, a broken repository in some way or another.
And to check that the net, like you haven't dropped, missed a packet as it came over and things like that.
Sure, so yeah. So, okay. You know, we unpack everything. We make sure that objects are well-formed, that, you know, you're not pushing up something saying, oh, this is SHA. The hash of this is, you know, 42, but the hash is in fact 43, right? Mm. Just standard integrity checks that Git Fisk runs. But then you can kind of tune that so that you can reject things like .git. So now if you try to push a file or a folder that has .git in it, you know, going back to the original security vulnerability, we'll reject that. And now we've expanded that sort of a check to look at bad Git modules files.
it sounds like it's you know, one of these ones where it, you know, you've got to do a lot of work to make sure it works. It works in a performant way so that the 99.99% of people who, you know, are pushing generally don't see a huge performance hit as well.
That's right. So yeah, so as part of this, we patched Git clients, you know, Git itself, Git 2, yada yada yada. We patched Git servers. So again, Git itself, and then people don't always use Git on the server. So things like, you know, JGit and Visual Studio Team Services needed to be patched to block these repositories. But that's, like you mentioned, Martin, that's not everywhere that Git is used. I'm curious, Etienne, what other fallout have you seen from this
vulnerability? You, like Heroku and places at Salesforce, they didn't, you weren't able to exploit one of your systems, or you, well, you don't have to tell us. But, you know, have you seen other places where that are using Git where this has actually turned into a bit of an issue?
Yeah, so one of my first steps was to make sure that Heroku is covered and everything's fine on our side. I guess I just have to say that. But other projects, surprising places, for example, yesterday, I think it was NPM, they released a security notice because the way the NPM CLI works is it calls your Git client and it does... pulls in recursive directories.
Oh, whoa, of course.
So NPM put out a security notice. One I didn't know would come out was Kubernetes. So Kubernetes has a volume option called Git repo. It's being depreciated because it has had security vulnerabilities in the past. But in this case, you can also supply a Git repository as a volume. And what will happen is the master node will clone that Git repository, you can force it to do the recursive clone and use that cloned repository as a volume for your pod. But because it happens inside the node, you get to run as root and you get full access to the cluster node.
Ouch.
Wow.
I didn't see that one coming.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a very surprising one for me as well.
Because we had to patch our build servers because they do a bunch of that sort of stuff. And yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Oh, man. Security's hard, isn't it?
I'm glad we have people like you taking care of it, Etienne.
Yeah, I really am, Etienne. I can't, you know. That man, yeah. Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, and so if you have any system that's taking a Git repository URL as input, there's a good chance that you're vulnerable to this.
Yeah. So Ed, you work on libgit2, which is what a lot between core Git and libgit2 and jgit, that's what I would hope the vast majority of people who have systems that use Git are doing it through one of those APIs, would you say?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
So what are those all been patched now?
Absolutely. So jgit actually wasn't vulnerable just because of the way it does string manipulation on paths. It was not vulnerable, so that's fine. Libgit 2 has an update. It's out. All of the bindings, we call them.
Yep.
The libraries that use libgit 2 under the hood, like libgit 2 sharp and rugged and nodegit, all have updates to include the security fix. And then of course Git itself, Git and Git for Windows, they all have updates. So yeah, go get the most recent patched version of your Git client or Git library.
Yeah, and then this is where, as Etienne's saying, if you're a service that's using Git, go update the Git library you're using, please, because you know, especially if you're taking, and it's one of these where you're taking parameters from, you know, users, you know, you've got to be able to trust those parameters. And here's an example where they can't.
So Etienne, thanks so much for all your hard work on this security issue. Thanks for disclosing it responsibly. And of course, thanks for appearing on the podcast.
Yeah, keep doing awesome work, Etienne. This is really, really cool. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Where can people find out more about what you've done and find out more about you? Where can people follow you on the internet?
So most of what I do tends to go onto Twitter. And I'm not going to try and say the handle, but it's _staldraad. I think it's going to be in the show notes anyway.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, I've got a link to my blog on there as well. And also from time to time, I publish under the Heroku blog.
Cool. Are you digging in and going to follow up or anything with some posts of your own around this particular exploit? Or are you happy now that it's out there and getting fixed?
I've got a blog post that I've written.
Cool.
And I've taken the approach of trying to explain step by step my thinking. So it's not a blog post that jumps straight into here's the perfectly optimized exploit for this. It goes through some of the stumblings I had, how I ran into issues where I was deleting random folders on my machine instead of getting code execution. So just to explain the mindset and how I went about this, and hopefully that helps other researchers and also the Git developers to look at ways people are using the product.
Thank you again. I know I've been thanking you a lot, Ray, but thanks for doing that, because that's one of the key things. Ed mentioned when we came into Microsoft, you know, we had to go see these security people and it's a bit frightening. The other thing we had to do was go on a bunch of security training, and then we have to regularly have gone on security training. Otherwise, we're not allowed to ship code that ships in production stuff, and everybody does in Microsoft. And by doing that and kind of thinking about the thought processes of how you know how somebody attacks a system, it helps you so much in your day to day job, you know, building that system to be more secure. I'm really, really looking forward to reading this blog, and we'll make sure we have a link to that in the show notes also.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, this has been a great show, Ed. If anybody's got any feedback of if they've enjoyed this show or other shows they'd like us to do, where should they send it?
That's right. So you can reach us on Twitter is the best way. We're at All Things Git, but we're also on Facebook. You can drop us an email. You can find that on our website, where allthingsgit.com. So yeah, thank you again, Etienne, for joining us. I think this has been amazing. This has been incredibly informative. Thanks so much for both all your hard work and for joining us on the podcast. Thanks, Martin. And of course, thank you for listening to another episode of All Things Git.